You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello, Bleeding Green Nation, and welcome back to another edition of Eye on the Enemy, powered by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I'm your host, John Stolness. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, it's a playoff week. Folks, it's playoff Eagles football. Eagles, Buccaneers, Monday Night Football, wild card round. Of course, the Eagles at 10-1. We did not expect to be going on the road for a wild card matchup here against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but that is what we've got. And we're going to keep our eye on the enemy by talking to James Yarcho. He's the deputy editor of Bucs Nation and host of the podcast Locked on Bucs. We'll get his thoughts on what's been going on in Tampa since these two teams last met back in week three, in which the Eagles had a dominating win over this very same squad. So all that coming up here on this edition of Eye on the Enemy. But before we get into the game, just a real quick history of these two teams in the postseason. And they have played each other an inordinate amount of times, especially over the last 20 years or so in the postseason, and specifically in the wild card round. In 1979, that was the first time these two teams met. The Buccaneers beat the Eagles for their first ever playoff win. It was in the NFC divisional round, 24-17. The Eagles scored late in that game to make it look a little bit closer than it was, but the Buccaneers, up until that season, had been the laughingstock of the NFL, and Dick Vermeil's Eagles graced. And that was the Eagles bursting onto the scene as well. That was the Eagles' first playoff season under Dick Vermeil. They were getting their feet wet a little bit and just were not quite ready for quote unquote prime time as the Bucs and Doug Williams took care of the Eagles 24-17. In 2000, following the 2000 season, the Eagles crushed the Bucs at the Vet in the wild card round 21-3. The following year, they had the exact same matchup and the exact same story took place. An even bigger defeat, 31-9, the Birds smashing the Bucs at Veterans Stadium in the wild card round, which made what happened after the 2002 season all that much harder to take. A third straight year hosting Tampa at Veterans Stadium in the NFC Championship game, a trip to the Super Bowl on the line, and of course, that... I was at that game, and that is still the most painful, I think the most painful Philadelphia sports loss of my entire life. The Eagles falling apart in that one with the late pick six from Rondé Barber. The Eagles losing 27-10 as Donovan McNabb was trying to make one last charge to turn a 20-10 game into a 20-17 game, and then you never know what can happen. It fell apart. Rondé Barber, the Eagles lose 27-10 to the Buccaneers. And then in 2021, Jalen Hurts in his first playoff appearance along with Nick Sirianni, the Eagles got blitzed into oblivion in that game by the Tampa D, and Tom Brady had his way with the Eagles defense on their way to his last Super Bowl victory, beating the Eagles 31-15, again, in a game that was not as close as the score indicates. So the Eagles, those two wins in 2000 and 2001, since then, the Buccaneers have won two straight against the Eagles, and they will look to make it three in a row against the Birds. The Eagles will try and even things up 3-3 in terms of playoff appearances against the Buccaneers with a win on Monday night. All right, well, I know a lot of you Eagles fans out there are not very confident in the Birds coming into Tampa for this wild card matchup on Monday night against the Bucs. It does not have the juice that one would normally expect before an Eagles playoff game. Nevertheless, the postseason tournament has begun, and a chance at a second straight Super Bowl appearance is in the offing. But first, the Eagles have to go to a team they really enjoy playing in the wild card round, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And joining me to help break this game down is James Yarcho, deputy editor of Bucs Nation. He's also the host of the Locked on Bucs podcast. James, welcome to Eye on the Enemy. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good, good. So first, let's talk injuries. That's always a big thing. On the Eagles side, on Thursday, Jalen Hurts didn't practice because he says he hasn't been able to throw a football yet, which is slightly concerning ahead of a playoff game that your quarterback's not able to throw a football, or at least he hasn't thrown a football yet. Hopefully he eventually does that at some point over the course of the weekend. But some injuries on the Eagles side, still waiting to hear about A.J. Brown, Reed Blankenship. They didn't practice on Thursday. We're hopeful that from the Eagles side that they're going to be ready to go. On the Bucs side, obviously, your quarterback is banged up, and he didn't practice on Thursday either. As we're recording this here late Friday morning, what is your understanding on Baker Mayfield's health coming into this game?
Unless he has to have his foot amputated above the ankle, Baker's going to play. Like, that's just how Baker Mayfield is, right? This is an ankle injury that he suffered in week four of the NFL season against the New Orleans Saints. He re-aggravated it against the Indianapolis Colts Thanksgiving weekend. And then it got re-aggravated again last week against the Carolina Panthers. And it absolutely could be a detriment. If he can't plant and he can't drive the ball with that right ankle injury, it could be a long day for the Bucs offense. But, you know, this is a guy that, you know, he's kind of the embodiment of Brett Favre, right? He will be bruised, battered, bloodied, broken, and still go out on that football field and play if he feels he can help the team win. So I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that Baker Mayfield will be under center Monday night.
All right. There were two other did not participate in Thursday's practices, linebacker KJ Britt and offensive tackle Tristan Wirfs. What is the status of those two guys?
I mean, Tristan, I also believe, is going to play. You know, like you said, he's dealing with an illness. We have that kind of that flu bug going around. So I don't think there's really anything concerning there. KJ Britt did miss last week with an injury, and he's a guy that has stepped in and played big for the Buccaneers this year in the absence of Devin White when he missed a few weeks with injury. So that one, I'm a little more concerned about him not being available and be part of the rotation. But I do believe that Tristan will play, barring any really setbacks or unforeseen circumstances stemming from that illness.
So it appears as though the Buccaneers are relatively healthy entering this wild card round, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part, outside of, you know, Baker and then, you know, just being banged up throughout the season. But for the most part, their starters are all healthy and raring to go.
Now, talk a little bit about Baker Mayfield, because he had his best season as a pro here in Tampa, a career high 4,044 passing yards, 64.3% completion percentage was also a career high, 28 touchdowns against 10 interceptions. So a lot of interceptions, but, you know, not too bad. And certainly Jalen Hurts eclipsed that number this year. So took better care of the football than Jalen Hurts did. And the sense that I see about Baker Mayfield is that he may have kind of ensconced himself, at least for next year, as the starting quarterback and maybe a little bit further down the line after that. How would you grade his season?
Honestly, I would give, if I was going to give him like a letter grade, I would give him a solid B+. I think he exceeded a lot of the expectations the Bucs fans had of him coming into this year, just because the 2022 season was such a roller coaster for him. He gets traded to the Panthers late in the process. Deals with basically trying to become the captain of an already fiery sinking ship, and then gets sent off to the Rams, where, you know, the Rams wanted him back, but he wanted the opportunity to be a starter, and that's what he found in Tampa. And you take a look around the NFL and the money that Baker Mayfield got compared to that of Derek Carr or Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's like the Bucs' return on investment here is massive. He and his wife absolutely love Tampa. The players gravitated towards Baker in a big way. He's the guy that in the lunchroom, he will bounce around and sit with every different position group all over the place just to be, you know, the guy on the team that really endears himself to all of his teammates. And, you know, going from Tom Brady to Baker Mayfield, a lot of people thought that there was going to be, you know, a very serious fall off. But you take a look back at that 2022 season with Tom Brady and Byron Leftwich as the offensive coordinator calling the shots, and it was a disaster. You know, this year's offense with Baker has outperformed last year's offense. And, you know, I think Baker has really played himself into another contract with Tampa. I think they're going to make it work. Both sides are interested. Both sides want this to continue. But there are other teams in the NFL looking for a quarterback, and they saw what Baker did this year, they might be willing and able to throw more money at him than what Tampa can. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see if they're able to lock him up before he's able to start speaking to other teams in that legal tampering or right. early negotiation period.
Like, full disclosure, I thought the Bucs were going to be awful this year, and the main reason for that was I thought Baker Mayfield, I've never been a fan of his. I've always thought he was a below league average quarterback, and he surprised me with his play this year, and that certainly is one of the reasons why Tampa finished 9-8 and on top of the NFC South. Now, I was looking at the game last week against the Panthers, the 9-0 win. Not overly impressive against the worst team in the NFL with the division title on the line. How did they only beat the Panthers 9-0 last week, and how close were they to actually losing that game?
I don't think they were really close to losing the game. You had Antoine Winfield Jr. making an incredible play to save a touchdown by DJ Chark, but you take a look back at that game, and I think the Panthers, one of the things that gets overlooked about the Panthers by people that aren't really paying attention to the NFC South, and let's be honest, outside of the NFC South, nobody's paying attention to that division because it's true. Not a great one. The Panthers have a really good defense. The problem is, all season long, they've been put in positions to fail. You know, you have Bryce Young turning the football over on short fields. You have consistent three and outs, and that defense gets worn out after a while. But they have some serious talent on the defensive side of the ball, and it was a combination of things where the play calling wasn't great. You know, Dave Canales, the rookie offensive coordinator for the Bucs, had almost a flawless month where the Bucs beat the Panthers and the Falcons and the Packers on the road and the Jaguars. It trounced the Jaguars. And then it kind of regressed against the Saints and regressed a little bit against the Panthers. But you were also dealing with that injury by Baker Mayfield, right? That ankle. And so he was kind of limited in what he was able to do. Ultimately, what the Bucs did was they just wanted to run out the clock. They had the lead. Their defense was on absolute fire, and they just wanted to, you know, seal the win and move on to the playoffs, regroup, get the rest for Baker, try to get that ankle as healthy as possible. So there really wasn't any point in that game against the Panthers where it was seriously in doubt. After they got a 3-0 lead and then extended it to 6-0, it almost felt insurmountable because of how bad the Panthers' offense is and how well the Bucs' defense was playing.
And the Eagles' defense has not offered any resistance whatsoever to some pretty lousy offenses over these last few weeks. And if you look at the tape, and I'm sure as you have spoken to other folks covering this game on the Eagles' side of things, they've painted you a very bleak picture, especially defensively, of what's been going on out there. I mean, since the things were not good under Sean Desai, they were last in third down defense. They were like second to last in red zone defense. They had their good moments, but it was also a very inconsistent defense, especially in these certain clutch situations. But moving over to Matt Patricia, it just does not appear like anyone has ever played football before. I'm not exaggerating. Like, you see guys running around, heads on a swivel, trying to figure out where they're supposed to be as the ball is snapped. Guys don't have their mouthpieces in their mouths as the balls are being snapped. You have three guys chasing after one guy who goes in motion. People just not understanding what their assignments are. It's as if high school coaches were hired in the middle of the season to take over the Eagles defense, and this is what you're getting. It's bizarre to me what's been going on with an Eagles defense that wasn't great under Sean Desai that has become, I think, this is the worst defense in the NFL right now. The things that are going on with Eagles defense, a lot of it's fixable if the coaching figures out how to get the message through to the players here. But now you've got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin coming into this matchup, both 1,000-yard receivers. Darius Slay will be back, and that's a good thing. But he's missed a month after going through knee surgery, so I'm not sure exactly what he's going to look like. James Bradbury has clearly lost a step, and Avante Maddox has been back for a couple of weeks in the slot. But he has been woeful since he came back. It just appears as though he came back too early. I would think, James, that this would be a matchup in Tampa's favor in a big, big way. You look at the names on the sheets, it looks pretty even. Do you think the Tampa offensive game plan will be for Baker to put the ball up a bunch early and try and utilize these two 1,000-yard receivers? Or do you think they're going to do what the Giants and the Cardinals have done these last 2 weeks, and that's really emphasized the running game early on an Eagles team that's been very susceptible to the run.
I think what we're looking at from the Buccaneers offense is, I've called it this a couple of times on Locked On Bucs, it needs to be death by a thousand paper cuts. That's the approach that they have to have. The interior protection by the Buccaneers offensive line over the last 2 weeks has been very, very bad. And there aren't really guys on the Saints or the Panthers that are as good as those on the Eagles, for the most part, up until this recent slump, in getting that pressure through the interior. So that's getting to Baker. That's shutting down run lanes before they even open. But one of the things that made the Bucs so successful over that four-game win streak that they had was adopting that run through the air philosophy, where it was these quick little dump offs to Rashad White and allowing him to get in space and make plays with his legs. And that's the approach they have to have. If they're going to run the ball, they need to do it where they've been successful, and that's bouncing it to the outside. More often than not, that's to the side of Tristan Wirfs and Aaron Stinney over on the left, but bouncing it out to the right side over by Luke Goedeke, that has worked as well. Running it up the middle has been the problem. But something that I've noticed over the last couple of weeks is the tendency for the Eagles to leave a lot of space close to the line of scrimmage. So if you're able to get Rashad the ball on a little 1 or 2 yard dump off, then he's going to have room to work and be able to make plays through the second and even into the third levels of the defense. It also gets the ball out of Baker's hands much, much faster. He's not having to plant and really drive off of that ankle very often. He's not going to be under pressure nearly as quickly. And that's the approach they need to have. And in doing that, the Bucs would be able to put together these 9, 10, 11, 12 play drives that are going to chew up 6 or 7 minutes. And it's going to wear out the Eagles' defense. It's going to keep the Bucs' defense fresh. And down the line into the second half, the third quarter, early fourth quarter, that's going to start to open up things down the field for Mike Evans, for Chris Godwin, for Trey Palmer, for Cade Otton up the seam, who has really emerged as a pass catching threat this year in his second year as a tight end. So the offense has to go through Rashad White, and it has to happen very quickly, and it has to happen through the passing game to open up those outside runs and to open up the deep shots to Evans and Godwin.
Yeah, and you're talking about the deep shots to Evans and Godwin, but in the playoffs a couple of years ago, when the Patriots and Tom Brady beat them, they used Mike Evans in the slot quite a bit in that game. Can you see a return to that? I mean, that's the Cowboys burned the Eagles a lot with CeeDee Lamb in the slot. You saw the 49ers do the same thing with Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. I mean, Mike Evans is maybe he's not quite at that tier, but he's real close to it if he's not, and can do a lot of damage in the slot against these Eagles linebackers and safeties. And hey, let's be honest, against Darius Slay, who they're dropping into coverage in zones, I wouldn't be surprised if Matt Patricia in his galaxy brain is looking at these matchups, thinking himself, well, I got to get me some Darius Slay on Mike Evans in the slot. That's the matchup that I want.
The Bucs and Dave Canales have done a really good job as this offense has evolved of moving Mike and Chris around quite a bit. A lot early in the season, they were always on the same side of the field, and the defense was able to hyper-focus on that side. And it's like, all right, you've put your two best guys over here. Go ahead and beat us with Trey Palmer, with Rakeem Jarrett, with David Moore and Devin Tompkins, and the Bucs couldn't do it. So there's been plenty of situations now where Chris Godwin, in his second half surge over the course of the latter half of the season, has returned back to that slot role. And there's still plenty of times where Mike Evans is in the slot as well. I think the big difference between this game and when the Bucs played the Eagles in the wild card round 2 years ago is the guy calling the shots on offense, right? Bruce Arians, he always wanted to go deep all the time. He wanted to score on every play. He wanted to score at halftime if it was legal. Canales is a little more conservative than Bruce Arians, and honestly, who's not? But he's done a really good job of scheming Chris Godwin open, especially on those money downs, but also starting to utilize Mike Evans out of that slot position. Evans just isn't quite as good out of that slot role as Chris Godwin is. And we've seen that over the course of the year. Mike Evans is a guy that can beat you with any route on the route tree. He's not just a deep threat. He's not just a slant guy. He's not just an out guy. he could beat you in any ways imaginable. The issue has always been, or at least this season, has been the consistency in which Baker Mayfield has been able to get him the ball.
So offensively, has anything changed from week three? I mean, obviously the Eagles beat the Buccaneers 25-11. That's been their most recent matchup. It was maybe the Eagles' most dominant performance of the season, offensively and defensively, just kind of suffocating the Tampa Bay offense and really not letting them get up off the ground. What's changed between week three and now on the Tampa side? Obviously, I think there's a lot that's changed on the Eagles side, but what are the Buccaneers doing better right now than they were doing when these teams matched up in week three?
It's the utilization of Chris Godwin, Cade Otton, and Rashad White. Chris Godwin was not a big factor early in the year. He wasn't getting a lot of targets, and lately he's been the guy, especially on those money downs, you know, those third downs, those fourth downs, those gotta have it. And Baker's talked about it. When they have to have, you know, 7 yards, he's looking to Chris Godwin. That's his guy. He knows he can trust him. He knows he can rely on him. And he knows that Chris is going to get open. And then again, the emergence of Rashad White in both the passing game and the running game. Over a 6-week stretch, the Buccaneers were a top 10 rushing team. They finished 31st in the NFL because they couldn't overcome how bad the run game was early in the season. But you know, they had season high rushing totals 4 consecutive weeks. And they've really been able to get Rashad White going. And a lot of that goes back to what I mentioned earlier in utilizing him in the short passing game, the running through the air that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers made so successful. And that started to open things up in the run game. But if Rashad can't run the ball, there's nobody else that can either. Chase Edmonds hasn't been effective in the run game. Keyshawn Vaughn is gone. Sean Tucker, the undrafted rookie, isn't exactly who they thought he was. So the Bucs really operate with just 2 running backs. So they rely heavily on Rashad. They rely heavily on Chris Godwin. And then, again, Cade Otton emerging as a legitimate threat. He's another guy that Baker tends to look to a lot on third downs, on third and 6, third and 7. Cade Otton gets to the sticks, turns around, uses that big body, and is able to make some really great catches. So those are facets of the Bucs offense that the Eagles really didn't see earlier in the year that have made the Bucs as successful as they were down the stretch and help them win a third straight division.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear all that. That's really good news, man. All right, let's flip the field now, and let's talk a little bit Eagles offense against the Buccaneers defense. And while the defense for the Eagles has been abysmal and unredeemable over the last month and a half or so, the offense has at times performed very well and at other times not played well at all. They really struggled against Seattle. Now, that was a game in which Jalen Hurts was dealing with a severe illness and probably shouldn't have been playing in the first place. The offense did okay against the Giants at home. They played very well against the Cardinals in that loss. And then last week was a weird week for the Eagles against the Giants. You know, they held out some of their starters, but they still had some of their other starters in. But you could just tell the players went out on the field and didn't care. Like, they suited up, but they were there in body, but not necessarily spirit. And that's on them. That's to me a bad sign, because there was still something to play for. You either say, we're punting this game, it's a bye week for us, or you go all in and you try to win that game. And at the end of the day, Jalen Hurts injures his finger, dislocates his finger, and it's totally up in the air right now whether or not he's going to be effective throwing the football. He hasn't been the same as a runner this year. You've got A.J. Brown. We're not sure if he's going to play. He got his ankle rolled up, or his knee rolled up on a play early in the game against the Giants. And Devontae Smith will be back, but he hurt his ankle against the Cardinals. And so there are a lot of question marks with this Eagles offense right now. The big question for Eagles fans is, can they repeat the rushing performance that they had in week three? DeAndre Swift was the big man back in week three against Tampa. He had a 16 carries, 130 yards against the Bucs. And that was really what was the driving force, especially late in the game. The Eagles went on a long 9-minute drive to salt the game away. We haven't seen them do that at the end of the season here when they've had opportunities. So when you look at the Eagles offensive line against what the Bucs are going to try to do defensively, what's the best way for the Eagles to go ahead and attack this Buccaneers defense? Will it be trying to get a repeat performance out of DeAndre Swift, or do you anticipate the Eagles trying to utilize their weapons outside, assuming that they have A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts healthy and ready to go in this one?
I think it's very possible for them to repeat their rushing performance. This Buccaneers defense, although they pitched the shutout and they played well against Carolina, still gave up over 130 rushing yards to Carolina last week. They gave up over 100 rushing yards the first time against Carolina with just the performance of Chuba Hubbard. He and DeAndre Swift were the only two running backs to go for over 100 yards against the Buccaneers this season. And you take a look back at that performance by Swift, and if they can get him going, obviously that's going to open things up for A.J. Brown if he plays, and of course DeAndre Swift and Quez Watkins and the pass catchers. But if they can get Swift going, it's going to cause problems for the Buccaneers defense. There's no doubt about it. And one of the other big shortcomings that they have is defending against the tight end. They had Juwan Johnson of the Saints have a career day against them 2 weeks ago. Career high in receptions, career high in yards, got in the end zone. They had no answer whatsoever for Juwan Johnson. So the way to beat the Buccaneers is you use your tight end, which the Eagles have a pretty darn good one, if you ask me.
Yeah, and they
me.
Don't use him nearly enough. He gets forgotten, and I don't know if that's a Hurts thing or if that's a Brian Johnson thing or a Sirianni thing. I think sometimes Hurts gets so locked into his two wide receivers. Dallas Goedert could absolutely be a 1,000-yard receiver in this offense, and they just don't get the tight end the ball enough.
Yeah, it's certainly, I mean, it's not a problem for the Bucs or Bucs fans if he doesn't get used. But going up against even second-tier tight ends and third-tier tight ends, seem to have a lot of success. And then passing the ball to the running backs, as much as Bucs fans like Devin White and all the hype and excitement that he brings and the Get Live 45 and doing his rodeo sack dance and all that, the dude cannot cover running backs. If you're going to beat the Bucs, you target the tight end and you run your running back on wheel routes all day long. If he's matched up against Devin White, if he's matched up against Levante, that's a different story. But if you get your running back or you get somebody out of the backfield one-on-one with Devin White, you target that guy and you are going to move the sticks up and down the field. This you go back to the first meeting against the Bucs. The Buccaneers did not have Kalijah Kancey in that game. They did not utilize Yaya Diaby, who has come on very strong to the point that he's probably in consideration for Rookie Defensive Player of the Year. Led all rookies in sacks, led all rookies in tackles for loss, and he only played about half the season. So he's been absolutely incredible. And then having Carlton Davis and Jamel Dean both healthy for only, I believe this is the third time this season that the two of them will both start a game. So the defense has gotten healthy at the right time. It's just a matter of if the Eagles are actually going to scheme against what works so well against the Bucs. It's the tight end. It's the running backs catching passes. And then still, even with the health, even with all of these guys back, they still have been somewhat susceptible in the run game. So I would expect the Eagles to try and ground and pound and establish that early on before starting to hit them with some, you know, intermediate to deep routes.
So as we come into this here, and we look at what the Eagles are going to try and accomplish on offense against this Bucs defense, where is the strength of the Bucs defense here? Like, if there's something the Eagles should stay away from or avoid doing?
It's going to be really hard to do this, but you have to scheme everything away from Antoine Winfield Jr., and that guy is all over the place. But the Eagles need to avoid him at all costs. He is the best safety in the NFL in terms of coverage grade, in terms of run defense grade. He is doing things that we haven't seen out of a defensive back in over 25 years, with the forced fumbles, the sacks. He has, I believe it was 7 passes defensed. He's got 3 interceptions, has a safety on the season. So Antoine Winfield Jr. is the ultimate wild card for this game against the Eagles defense, because you never know where he's going to be. You never know what he's actually doing. And no matter what his assignment is, he's doing it better than any other safety in the National Football League. So he's kind of what is going to drive this Buccaneers defense as he's done all year. But outside of that, I did touch briefly on the impact of Yaya Diaby. You know, this is a third round pick out of Louisville who has taken over the starting edge rusher role opposite of Shaq Barrett over former first round pick Joe Tryon Shoyinka, who has had his contributions, but I don't think he's quite what the Bucs thought that they were getting. Instead, they got that guy out of Yaya Diaby, and he's just been absolutely unbelievable. He's so fast off the edge. His anticipation of the snap count for a rookie is unlike anything I have seen out of a Buccaneers player in ever. Honestly, I've been following this team since 1995. I've never seen a rookie anticipate things the way Yaya Diaby has. So you combine that, of course, with the big guys up front, Vita Vea, Kalijah Kancey, who when they're on, they're on. When they're off, that's when you have guys like DeAndre Swift and Chuba Hubbard breaking through and rushing for over 100 yards.
And something Lane Johnson said this week, they're asking him basically, how do you get back on track? And he basically said, through me. Like we're and which is kind of an indication like they kind of recognize that they want to get back to being that run first team that was so successful at the end of 2021 and was so successful at times during 2022, because they kind of know they can build the passing game off of the running game. But the Eagles offensive line still littered with Hall of Fame talent and Pro Bowl players playing very well. They haven't been as sharp this year. And this is a game, this is a time of year where they really need to kind of take the onus on themselves and for the Eagles to reestablish their identities as bullies in the trenches. And we'll see if they're able to kind of do that against two different lines here, the Bucs offensive and defensive lines, that really on paper the Eagles should have an advantage there. So I'm going to ask you for a prediction on this game. I will also ask you, like, is there, of all the opponents that the Buccaneers could have faced here in this wild card round, is this the best matchup for the Buccaneers? Like, you're clearly taking on an Eagles team that 6 weeks ago you probably wouldn't have wanted any part of, but as they're playing football right now, I can't imagine there is a team in the NFC playoff field that would be a better matchup for the Bucs.
I think out of the possible combinations that the Bucs could have faced, the Eagles are absolutely the better matchup. The Bucs do not match up well offensively or defensively against the Dallas Cowboys, and a lot of Bucs fans were rooting for the Cowboys to win or rooting for the Giants to win in order to get that matchup against Philadelphia. And if they had played Dallas, it probably would have looked similar to what last year's first round looked like, and it was just absolute dominance by Dallas all game long. So, yeah, you take a look at kind of the way the Eagles have been struggling, allowing, I think it's over 30 points a game over the last 6 weeks, and kind of how the offense has been hot and cold. This is ultimately the matchup that they were all rooting for, because it's the best matchup for the Bucs. It kind of continues to renew that postseason rivalry, right? The Bucs won back in 1979. Then they lose two straight, and it leads to Dungy getting fired, and then you have 2002 and Rondé Barber, and then
don't say that name, James. Why do you come on my podcast and say that name? I just don't no need to say that name. I was there that day. I was in Veterans Stadium for that game, watching Rondé Barber run that thing back. That was the worst game I've ever been to in my life of anything.
I am contractually obligated to mention Rondé Barber's name anytime I speak on an Eagles show.
Future reference, James. Noted.
I apologize for nothing. No, I actually remember my pastor growing up was a diehard Eagles fan. And as Rondé scored, he actually called and congratulated me and my dad on that win, because he's a great guy. But we know how that one ended. And then 2021, of course, you have a situation where the Bucs were, again, Super Bowl favorites, or one of the Super Bowl favorites. The Eagles were just kind of happy to be there and excited about the direction their team was heading. And then all of a sudden they're in the Super Bowl the next year. They're the defending NFC champions. And when you take a look at the NFC playoff landscape, the Bucs' best odds to move on to the divisional round is probably this matchup. And then I think a lot of Bucs fans are also hoping for a Rams win and a Packers win, because that'll send the Packers to San Francisco and allow the Bucs to host the Rams in the divisional round, who the Bucs have never beaten in the postseason. But Yeah, this game will decide if these teams are 500 against each other in the postseason,
right,
or if the Bucks are going to win three straight and move to 4-2. Look, coming into this week, I wasn't really sure how to feel about this game, and I even told you before we started recording that I did a show with the Locked On Eagles guys, and I had the Eagles winning this one 21-20. It was in my notes, it was in my, you know, my prediction segment, and they talked me out of it essentially. And so I think Chase McLaughlin, my beloved Fighting Illini, which also, quick side note, my heart was broken for Sidney Brown. I absolutely love that guy. I am a lifelong University of Illinois fan, which during football season can be tough.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wish him a speedy recovery, and I want to see nothing but, you know, Pro Bowl level play out of him, even if he is in Philadelphia, just because he is such a great dude and such a good football player. But, yeah, I think this one will come down to the leg of Chase McLaughlin, and the Bucks are going to take it 23-21.
I'm not going to talk you out of that. I think that's in general the direction I'm leaning as well. I'm going to give my prediction at the end of the podcast, but I am not picking the Eagles to win this game. And I said to you before we started, I've picked the Eagles to win every single week. At the beginning of the season, they were winning every week, so it made a lot of sense. And then during this slide, I kept thinking, okay, this is the week they turn it around. Oh, this is the week they got to play better. Okay, they've played three bad games in a row. Now they get three easy opponents. They can't possibly lose to these folks. And here we are in the wild card round. So I will not talk you out of picking the Buccaneers. I certainly think the line remains interesting. The Eagles 3-point favorites at last look. That could still move going to Monday, but if it hasn't moved a whole lot yet, it probably won't. So it's that alone gives me some hope that the Eagles might come in here and surprise people that they're a road favorite, given how they've played of late. But very, very interesting matchup here. And of course, for the Eagles and our fans, unbelievably, it could have ramifications on the future of the franchise with regard to the head coach and certainly the assistant coaches and all that. So a lot to play for here on Monday night as the Eagles and Buccaneers renew their wild card rivalry. And like James said, we'll see whether or not the Eagles can even up this playoff series between these two teams. Folks, head on over to Bucs Nation to get a better eye on the enemy. You can see everything that's going on with the Buccaneers through our SB Nation site, of which James Yarcho is the deputy editor, and want to also encourage you to listen to Locked On Bucs if you'd like to keep an eye on the enemy with your ears through podcast forms. Hey, James, thanks for coming on Eye on the Enemy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it as well.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, well, you heard James deliver his prediction. I think you can kind of tell the direction I'm going in with my prediction. And really, shame on the Eagles for sucking all of the joy out of an NFL playoff game. NFL playoff games with your team should never be taken for granted. NFL playoff games can happen in so many different ways. They can happen like it was in 2021 when Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni surprised themselves and surprised the city by going on a late regular season run and making the playoffs. And then they ran into the Tom Brady buzzsaw. Jalen Hurts was not ready for what the Buccaneers were going to throw at them. Neither was Nick Sirianni. Neither was the Eagles defense. They went in there. They got some playoff experience. And then they used that playoff experience in 2021 to help them go on that run in 2022. Now here the Eagles are in 2023, facing more adversity than they have under Nick Sirianni. There are calls loud and clear from the rooftops, from the mountaintops, for the Eagles to make a change. Certainly on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, Brian Johnson, his job status, very, very much up in the air, although I think he's a little bit more secure than on the defensive side of the ball. Nick Sirianni's job security, very much up in the air. Absolutely, there is a hot seat, and Nick Sirianni is sitting on it. How the Eagles play on Monday night could have a big impact on Nick Sirianni's future with the Eagles in 2024 and beyond. Seems crazy that we're here. And I think that's one of the things that makes this all so hard to comprehend is that when this team was 10-1, they were clear-cut Super Bowl contenders. They had won so many games over the course of the last 2 years. There was just no doubt in anyone's mind. Now, I called them the Patriots, the new Patriots. You heard me talk about it last week. I mean, there's the 180 that has taken place here. And the lack of these teams, of these coaches, not seeming to have any answers for any of it. And the players themselves have seen their play diminish. Offensive line, defensive line, these two areas where you're supposed to be strongest, they have not produced for reasons that make no sense to anyone. And because they've looked so bad, it's not just that they've lost some games. It's that they were outclassed by the Giants and the Cardinals these last couple weeks. The fact that they lost that Seahawks game against Drew Locke in the final 2 minutes. That they looked completely uncompetitive with the 49ers and Cowboys the second time around. You can see it. No one in the locker room has any confidence or belief in themselves. The Eagles released a hype video, and it sounded great. It sounded like they had fight left in them, that the struggles that they're facing right now are only going to make them stronger. That's the messaging, and I get it. That's what you have to tell yourself. And there are some, you know, sometimes when all of the momentum is going in one direction, that it almost becomes too much, right? And there was this interesting stat from ESPN, and we have it linked on bleedinggreennation.com, that just because the Eagles are going through this funk right now doesn't mean that they can't win this playoff game. The Philadelphia Eagles went 0-6 against the spread to finish the season. They're the first time to do that and make the playoffs since the 49ers did it in 2002. However, as ESPN notes, although the Eagles are the sixth team in the Super Bowl era to enter the playoffs on at least a six-game against the spread losing streak, each of the previous five won their first playoff game that season. The Eagles still are three-point favorites against the Buccaneers. The Buccaneers barely beat the Carolina Panthers last week, 9-0. They are not as good a football team as the Eagles are. The Eagles have far more talent than the Buccaneers do. And that includes on defense. There is talent on that defense. Now, Reed Blankenship possibly not being available for this game will hurt, especially with Sidney Brown out for the season with his torn ACL. Kevin Byard's got a lot of work to do. They might move Avante Maddox to safety a bunch and have Eli Ricks back on the field in the slot or have some kind of combination there. But if they don't have Sidney Brown or Reed Blankenship, it's going to be a tough day. Cornerbacks like Darius Slay, who likes to poke fun at the fans this week. Man, read the room. Read the room. You know, you missed the last 4 weeks. You weren't here for these last 4 weeks, and you're going to come in and joke around at the fans' expense? listen, I mean, you do you, but read the room, man. This ain't the environment for that. This team needs to just go out on Monday night with nothing to lose. I really hope that they're going to come out and things are going to be simplified. That they're just going to say, listen, let's just see what happens. Let's get in the trenches and let's beat them up. And that certainly is possible. It's possible that these dominant lines with all of this talent, where the Eagles have built their reputation over the last couple of years, that they will come in and that they will do what they did in week 3, and that is dominate this Tampa offense and defense. That is in the cards. And according to Vegas, that's the more likely scenario. But like I said, I don't have any confidence in this team. The team doesn't have any confidence in themselves. Why would I, as a fan, have confidence in Nick Sirianni and Brian Johnson and Matt Patricia and Sean Desai and all of the assistant coaches who are doing all of the little things wrong, all of the details, the small things, the things that this team used to obsess getting right, they're doing them all wrong now, all of a sudden. Why? And that is the thing we are never going to be able to wrap our heads around. Why was this the most miserable team in the NFL at 10-1? Why have things fallen apart as quickly as they have? Why did they feel the need to fire Sean Desai? And I'll say this about Sean Desai. People forget, the defense was not good under Sean Desai. Okay? Again, like I mentioned to James, they were last in third down defense. They were third to last or second to last in red zone defense. They were getting killed. They had good moments, though. And we look back on it now, comparing it to what we've seen these last few weeks, and we say, oh my gosh, that defense wasn't that bad at all. It was bad. It was bad. And removing Sean Desai, I don't think was necessarily the wrong choice, but the timing of it didn't work. And certainly the guy they chose to replace him with was the wrong choice. So now you have this referendum on Nick Sirianni linked to this football game. And maybe for Jeffrey Lurie, maybe it won't just be about this one football game. But this is a prime time, everybody's watching matchup. The eyes of the world, the football world, are going to be on this game because it's the last game of the weekend on Monday Night Football. And if this team goes out and gets their doors blown off, if they go out and get embarrassed, if they get boat raced like the Cardinals did to them offensively, like the Giants did to them last week, like the 49ers and the Cowboys did to them, by this Tampa team, which is not very good, if they go into Tampa and get boat raced and embarrassed, all bets are off. Because at that point, and I'm not the only one to make this point, but Nick Sirianni has already demoted himself. In his rookie season, he demoted himself. He took away his play calling duties. Now, that was the right thing to do, because Shane Steichen's a master at it. But he hasn't picked it back up. Instead, he's let Brian Johnson do it. And Brian Johnson, by the way, has gotten 2 head coaching job requests. So clearly the league doesn't see Brian Johnson as a major problem here. And if you want to say it's Rooney Rule stuff, maybe you could say that. I'm not going to assume that, because I don't think that's fair to Brian Johnson. And this is Nick Sirianni's offense, his scheme, his everything. Brian Johnson just calls the plays. So if Nick Sirianni, who has demoted himself back in his rookie season, is now, he's not in charge of play calling, but he's in charge of the details. He's in charge of the vibes. He's in charge of what the assistant coaches are doing. And if all of these things are getting missed and going wrong, and the players don't have any confidence in what the coaching staff is telling them to do, and you have Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman coming in and saying, okay, we need to fire everybody. We need to fire Brian Johnson. We need to fire your assistants. We need to get all these different guys in here. We need to get some different voices in here. And Nick Sirianni, what then is Nick Sirianni? Do we expect Nick Sirianni to be a better head coach if everything underneath him is different? If that's the case, what is Nick Sirianni's role? What is his job? Why, you could get anybody to do that. If Nick Sirianni's stamp on this team goes away, but he remains the head coach, I don't know what we're doing. I don't know what we're looking at here, which is why I almost think that if Nick Sirianni stays, Brian Johnson kind of has to stay. It doesn't make sense to remove Brian Johnson and keep Nick Sirianni. If you're going to keep Nick Sirianni, if you've decided that's what you're going to do, come hell or high water, whatever happens on Monday night, then you have to keep Brian Johnson. Because if you take Brian Johnson away and these other offensive, like the offensive game coordinator and everything else, you take that all away, unless Nick Sirianni is going to reclaim the play calling duties, which doesn't seem to be in the cards, I don't understand what his role here is. And then why wouldn't you just bring somebody new in that who will bring in their own coaching staff and change things up and maybe, you know, this Eagles offense is very vanilla. It's very simple. It's very high school. You're relying on your skill position players. There was something that came out on Friday that graphed the Eagles' completion percentage over expectancy and actual completion percentage. Basically, what that means is it's a graph that shows who is making and completing the most difficult throws in the NFL. Jalen Hurts is far and away attempting more difficult low percentage throws than anyone else in football, and yet he's completing more of them than anyone else in football. That's not sustainable. You need more layups in this offense and against this blitz that Todd Bowles is going to throw against this Eagles team. They have not shown an ability to handle it over the last couple of months. Specifically, they haven't handled it well at all with Jalen Hurts, and some of this is on Jalen too. Hey, Jalen has been playing with these guys for two seasons now. He's got to know where the blitz is coming from. He's got to alert it to his players. This is a very common thing that quarterbacks do. They should even have kind of a symbiotic relationship now. Like Dallas Goedert can see that the safety is going to rush him. And he can look to Jalen and he can pat his helmet or give just a look on his eyes saying, you know what's coming. And then we know to do this. They can do the same thing with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Like there are ways to do this that the Eagles are just not doing. It's like they call the play. And, this is the play we called 15 yards down the field. It doesn't matter what's happening. And they get burned by it. Like, is that Hurts? Is that Sirianni? I don't know what it is. But if you've decided that Sirianni is your guy, no matter what happens here on Monday night, then you got to keep Brian Johnson, in my view. And if you're going to get rid of Brian Johnson, you've got to get rid of Nick Sirianni. And so I don't know how much of what happens on Monday night is going to affect Nick Sirianni's job security. If they get blown out, it's possible he goes. And if they don't fire Brian Johnson and they bring in a whole new staff that's going to do things differently and bring all of these new schemes in that Nick Sirianni's not comfortable with, there's no way it's going to work. It's going to be Doug Peterson and Rich Scangarella all over again. So the X's and O's of what's going to happen here on Monday night are huge. Can the Eagles stop the blitz? Can they reestablish a running game? Can they get pressure on Baker Mayfield? That's the story of this game. And frankly, will Jalen Hurts be healthy enough to throw the football? Will A.J. Brown play? Those are the two big unanswered questions as we record here on Friday morning. We just don't know the status of those guys. If it's Marcus Mariota and Zacchaeus or Quez Watkins out there alongside Devontae Smith, forget about it. Unless they're just going to plan to run Marcus Mariota 20 times and not throw the football. So if Jalen Hurts is not at 100%, if he's not healthy, that's a big factor of what goes in here. And maybe that's a stay of execution for Nick Sirianni and Brian Johnson. They can argue, I didn't have my quarterback. I didn't have my best wide receiver. We didn't have these two guys that we rely on more than any team in the league relies on their quarterback and number one wide receiver. So given the uncertainty over Jalen Hurts' health and A.J. Brown's health, given what we've seen over these last few weeks, given the Eagles' inability to stop the blitz, given their inability to pressure the quarterback, given their reluctance to run the ball, I can't in good conscience pick the Eagles to win this game. I just can't. I've picked them to win every game this year. They broke me. Guys, they finally broke me. So I'm going to take the Buccaneers to end the Eagles season way sooner than any of us thought and put the Eagles, the 2023 season, and maybe most of this coaching staff, if not all of it, out of their misery. I think the Buccaneers win this game, let's say 24 to 20. 24 to 20, Buccaneers win. That's going to do it for this edition of Eye on the Enemy. I wish I had better news for you folks, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope we are back next week previewing a divisional round matchup against some team that the Eagles will almost certainly get their doors blown off by, but maybe not. Maybe the Eagles come out and they shock us all and they give us a little bit more confidence heading into a divisional round game next week. Either way, we will be back to talk about what happened here in the wild card round and look ahead at what's going on around the rest of the NFL in terms of the divisional round of the playoffs, and we'll obviously obviously deal with the fallout from whatever happens this Monday night against the Buccaneers. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Eye on the Enemy.
BGN.
From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, the Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to the Current Report wherever you get your podcasts.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.